newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is a half hour of commentary and analysis on the media issues of the day with some veteran newsroom folks with local perspective on things. I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now creating the Upstate American on Substack. I'm here in the studio with Judy Patrick, formerly editor of the Daily Gazette. How you doing?
Good. The media news just keeps rolling in, doesn't it?
There's a lot, you know, which is why we get to have a show every week.
Yeah, for 30 years.
Amazing. And across on the other side of the table here is our producer, David Gustina, who is now in front of a microphone today.
That's a dangerous thing to do on this program, because sometimes I feel like going way back, we need someone to monitor you two.
I know what you mean. Yeah. Listen, not to tout the media's own good work, but the Pulitzer Prizes were announced since this program aired last.
Self-serving button. Self-serving button.
What can you do? But there were some really great moments to note here, right?
Oh, indeed. And I love going through the list. And usually, if it's written well, there will be links so I can actually go to the real story that won, or the real photograph, or the real series that won the event. And you can see some wonderful reporting. People often complain that the media is missing this story. We're not covering the climate. We're not covering the immigration crackdown. We're not covering the corruption in the Trump administration. Go through the list of Pulitzers, and you'll realize that journalism did a wonderful job last year. And all these Pulitzers are well-deserved. And in fact, I wish we could hand out more.
I'd like to make note in particular of two of them. The one that is the Pulitzer Gold Medal for Public Service went to the Washington Post, which, you know, is under pressure these days, thanks to the cuts by its owner, Jeff Bezos. But in particular, this was about piercing the veil of secrecy around the Trump administration's chaotic overhaul of federal agencies, DOGE. This was good stuff. And of note is that the cornerstone reporting of that was by Hannah Nathanson, who is the reporter whose apartment was, I would say, broken into, except there was, in fact, a search warrant.
But quite an emotional scene, her getting that award.
Yes.
Yeah, yoo-hoo for her.
Absolutely. So that is great. And second, I would note a special citation was given to Julie K. Brown of the Miami Herald because it was her groundbreaking reporting in 2017 and 2018 that exposed Jeffrey Epstein's systematic abuse, and she did not get a Pulitzer at that time. So this special citation is basically a way of the Pulitzer board going back and saying, let's take note of this.
And it involved Alex Acosta, right? The U.S. attorney in Florida, who ended up with a cushy position in the Trump administration.
Yes, went to the Trump cabinet after giving a swell deal to Jeffrey Epstein in his first prosecution. I should note, by the way, that Julie K. Brown will be here in Albany in the fall, receiving the Nellie Bly Award from the Museum of Political Corruption. So we will see if we can get her on this program.
That would be fantastic.
Wouldn't it be great?
Rex.
Because we did have one of the previous winners of that award. And congratulations to the Museum of Political Corruption for making a great decision there, Julie K. Brown. Anyway, a lot of great reporting being recognized. And I think it's important for us to make note of the fact that notwithstanding the pressures on the enterprises of journalism caused by the digital revolution, caused by changing lifestyles, by attacks from politicians, there is significant, strong reporting going on all around the country. When you look at the winners, the Seattle Times, the New York Times won three of them, San Francisco Chronicle, Reuters won two, the Connecticut Mirror, a nonprofit newsroom across the state line in Connecticut. Really terrific work by journalists, and congratulations.
Now, who decides who gets these awards? Rex, I believe you were involved at one point.
At 2 points. I was twice
a
juror. There are juries for every category. Probably seven people will sit in a jury for, say, breaking news reporting, and they'll read all of the entries over a couple of days period and talk about them and come up with three finalists who go to the Pulitzer Prize board, which is selected by Columbia University.
does it favor, do you think, the larger news organizations because of the amount of resources they have to put into reporting?
Yes, but I think that there is, because great reporting tends to do that, but there is also, I would say, something of a bias on the part of jurors to try to pay attention to brave work by local news organizations. So, for example,
the Berkshire Eagle
in 1954. Yes, exactly. The Berkshire Eagle won a Pulitzer Prize in 1954. The Glens Falls Post star, Mark Mahoney, yep, who was their editorial writer, won a Pulitzer Prize before he went to work for you, Judy,
mm-hmm,
right? And he
Gazette?
Is still at the Gazette.
He is indeed.
Mm-hmm. So, Mark Mahoney already knows what his obituary will say. It's very nice. Most of us don't know what the lead of our obituary is, but Mark does.
Won't it be you and the Pro Musica?
Yes, Rex Smith, who sang with Albany
singer,
Pro Musica.
Pro
yes,
Musica.
Yes, Rex Smith, singer. That would be great. So we really ought to say something about the passing of Ted Turner.
Oh, yeah.
You know, media mogul. Basically, would you say that he created around-the-clock journalism?
Absolutely. The 24-hour news cycle. Look how well that's done.
I mean, what do you mean?
Well, this goes also to narrowcasting. So he had ESPN and MTV and all these other channels that came in, dividing our attention, right? Then the idea, just with the 24-hour news channel, that you've got to have something there all the time. To push things out, more mistakes come that way. We end up with a lot of live events, and it's great for repeating a story over and over and over again. The original viral videos, I believe, start at the 24-hour news network. So while Ted Turner certainly changed the industry, I don't know if he really changed it for good.
He definitely changed the industry and our attention on news. But over time, I have seen the cable news networks focus a lot on politics and less on news. And the other thing I have found interesting following his death is to watch the coverage and listen to the coverage and read the coverage, because CNN hardly touched any of the controversies that dogged Ted Turner. And there were quite a few, especially in his early years. It was a very, you know, laudatory, and as it should be. I mean, he was an innovator. He was a titan, I would concede. But there were other parts of his time, and it's one of the reasons he made a lot of headlines, because he said controversial things. He did controversial things, but towards the end of his, the second half of his life, he was a very strong environmentalist, conservationist. But he said what he thought, and that sometimes got him in trouble. What he's done for CNN, I think it was remarkable. It changed how I looked at news, and it changed how reporters chase stories. But again, I think they have pulled it in too far. CNN is best when they're covering breaking news. They very rarely cover breaking news anymore.
Very interesting. The focus on politics is something that is problematic for journalism overall. I hadn't traced it to CNN, but that's an interesting point, that is perhaps where it began. Politics is the easiest thing to cover because all those politicians want you to cover them,
yeah,
right? And I say this as a former political writer. So I always admired business reporters because they have to do stuff. In fact, years ago at the New York Times, they would take a bright young reporter and intentionally put that reporter on the business staff, even though they didn't have any background.
Because the business people never want to talk.
Yeah.
They don't return calls. They don't want to talk about what's happening. Yeah, business is a tough one.
A lot of it is document-based reporting and really digging. So that's great reporting if you can pull it off. But, truth-telling is the challenge in political reporting because we're being lied to consistently all the time. But I just wonder, to your point, David, about narrowcasting, I wonder if that wasn't inevitable, even if Ted Turner hadn't started
it. I think so, because people's appetites were there. I don't think a lot of people in the broadcast industry recognized that people would have the appetite, for example, for 24-hour sports. But think about what that does then when that kind of on-demand. Now you can really watch whatever you want on demand, but then it was just you could turn into that channel that focused on what you liked. And doesn't that deter you and make you make a choice that before, as I've always said, when it was just ABC, NBC, CBS, and PBS, and the president spoke or there was something important, we were all either paying attention to it or we were doing something outside or turned away. We weren't watching SpongeBob SquarePants.
Aw, let's not go after SpongeBob. Come on.
Well, see what I mean? You see what we've become?
You're right. We used to just, by chance, stumble upon news or stumble upon a weather opportunity to learn something about the climate. When you're just watching football games or basketball games or people cooking, you are not going to stumble upon other kinds of information.
To me, it's easier then for the politicians in this world, if we go back to politics, to manipulate things, because if people are busy watching the sports channel and the golf channel and MTV and now on their social media feeds and watching influencers, we've lost our connection to each other along with watching the news. That cohesiveness of, let's say, Americans and understanding what their government is all about.
Absolutely so. The atomization, I guess, is the word, right? Making into atoms, the atomization of information has affected our comprehension, our attention spans, our interests. And I don't know how or if we will ever get that back. I don't know what's a way to actually draw people's attention to what matters other than for people to just keep trying. I worry that we will devolve into a society where there is an informed upper group and a less informed mass. We were working against that in the middle of the 20th century. We were actually getting a much more educated populace.
Now I think the word cynicism, that it's a very cynical public. They're willing to doubt the veracity of anything from anybody now.
Yeah.
Name me a news anchor, really, among more younger folks that they would recognize as their trustworthy figure that they can listen to or watch every single night and say, I believe that person. And now it's an influencer.
That's
who
right.
shares their particular view of things, not a more objective or fair view of things.
Yes, in fact, as we reported on this program a couple of weeks ago, now online influencers actually are surpassing legitimate journalists among under 49, is it? Under age 49 or under age 35 as the primary source of information for those people.
To me, that's dangerous,
mm-hmm.
even if I were to agree with that influencer.
Of course, they're certainly not going to be getting information from the old home of Walter Cronkite. Just make note of the fact that CBS News under Barry Weiss is flailing, right? The CBS Evening News with Tony Dokeville has even fallen further behind ABC at number one, David Muir and NBC. By all judgments that I have seen so far, this remake of CBS News under the leadership of an opinion journalist with right-wing tendencies who has never covered a news story, has never worked in television news, for some reason, the remake is not working out too well.
That's strange, but the interesting connection now back to Ted Turner is they're looking at the possibility of merging CBS with CNN.
Sure. Absolutely. As the
And that value system is going to come from CBS in the takeover of CNN.
Yeah, the new value system
exactly.
is what you're saying,
yes,
will probably affect CNN. Everybody at CNN is said to be quite worried about that. As the Ellisons close in on this deal to take over Warner Brothers Discovery, these are nervous-making times, I would say, at CNN.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, speaking of great journalism in the face of pressure, as we were talking about in the Pulitzer Prizes.
Do you need a drink?
We need to have a,
maybe we should have a...
Oh, we had champagne while you were away.
Yeah.
Oh,
we can do this as a weekly thing.
No, you're about to... I'm about to talk about bourbon, folks. That's why David brought this forward. This is kind of interesting. Well, it's very interesting. So Cash Patel, the FBI director, has, according to The Atlantic magazine, a reporter named Sarah Fitzpatrick reported last month that FBI personnel are alarmed. Obviously, she has a lot of sources in the FBI by what they said was erratic behavior and excessive drinking by the FBI director. We know that he's had private security guards and FBI protection for his girlfriend, who is a country singer. So he filed a defamation suit against The Atlantic and Sarah Fitzpatrick. What I like is that Sarah Fitzpatrick and The Atlantic have kept on the story. And she reported last week that the FBI director not only is selling swag on a website he co-founded with his name.
That's probably one of the most shocking things to me, that he continues to do that.
Yeah, he continues to do it. He's giving away bottles of Woodford Reserve bourbon engraved with the words Cash Patel, FBI director.
With the S as a dollar sign.
Oh, my God. And in the FBI shield, it's kind of incredible, isn't it?
Is this taxpayer-funded bourbon?
You know,
or is he paying for this himself?
That's a good question. I don't know.
And is he paying it with the, what would seem to me, a conflict of interest swag website?
Yeah.
And given the fact that President Trump has a clear distaste for alcohol and people who use alcohol, you've got to wonder, you know, how brazen this is on Kash Patel's part to do this. And also, the reporter's sources must be pretty good that they're sending her this amount of information. I'm curious to see how far this defamation lawsuit goes. It doesn't seem to have a lot of oomph to it.
All of these things. I think he's just trying to be like Donald Trump. He's filing a lawsuit against a reporter who's, it is a blatantly unconstitutional, laughable lawsuit. An outrageous assault on the First Amendment by the director of the FBI. Unsurprising, of course, given where these people come from.
Well, the truth is your best defense as a journalist. There's no reason why they shouldn't continue to investigate. Here's my question. We've got an administration that does not like leaks and does not like anonymous sources. And so in some ways, you could think they're at greater harm if you release their name. So should we, in light of what's happening with this administration, be a little bit more willing to have anonymous sources in our story because of that? Because we always say, no anonymous sources, get them on the record. But people's livelihoods get ruined by this administration.
Well, that's true. You know, almost anybody can make an argument or a case for the fact that they don't want their name in an article. I was listening to a story where the person was commenting on politics and didn't want their name associated with it just because they were worried that they would be hassled at work. So, I mean, there's always some cases, but at some point you have to push people to come forward and be brave enough to attach their name. It's easy for me to say, but...
But you're right, and that's part of an editor's job, is to push the reporters to push the sources, is to say, you know, let's see if you can get that on the record. And how many times have we done that in our careers where we say, yeah, that's really interesting, do we have that on the record?
Almost every day.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like people say, well, I'll be embarrassed.
That's not the excuse.
That's not a good enough excuse.
Nor is embarrassment by the FBI director grounds for lawsuit. There is no litigation there. There is no tort against embarrassment. It's just kind of ridiculous. Reminds me of the time that we were sued at the Times Union over allegedly breaking an embargo.
You will not publish.
And ethically, you know, you adhere to an embargo if somebody gives you a press release, but our reporter had separately, through different sources, come across this story before.
That happens.
Absolutely. So what are you going to do? But that didn't go away. That lawsuit didn't go away as quickly as we thought it did. I actually had to be deposed and go through some shenanigans before that lawsuit went away, as all the others did eventually.
Wow. Yeah, I had forgotten the days of embargoes where they would send out a press release and say on the top, say, embargoed until 5 p.m. It's like, I didn't agree.
You just gave me the information.
Yeah. Right. Like someone trying to tell you at the end of a phone conversation, so this is all off the record.
Right.
You say, uh-uh.
But are there times I'm thinking of, you know, when the Pentagon calls and says, you know, hey, this is embargoed. I know you know about this, but we don't want to publish this because you're going to endanger our troops abroad.
There are times, and that argument has been made and was made in the White House, in the Oval Office, in fact, as I'm recalling the Washington Post declining to publish material at the urging of President George W. Bush, I believe, running up to the Iraq War.
Yeah.
And I believe there were actually conversations between Len Downey, the Washington Post executive editor at the time, and the president. So, yes, sometimes you honor these requests when you find information and you think, yeah, we could be really messing up lives.
That's why you can't generalize with anything, especially
right.
in journalism.
You can't generalize with anything. There's a generalization for you. Generally, you can't generalize.
Generally. But you know what I mean. The idea that every story is a specific, separate thing, and you have to evaluate it based on its own characteristics. You can't just generalize and say, well, we're always going to say no off the record, for example.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Hey, here's a great instance where, David, that is true. Because we have talked on this program before about the use of artificial intelligence in journalism. This gives us a great opportunity to talk about this topic. And we are quite concerned about journalists who are using, there are some newspapers that are actually writing stories with this. And this has been talked about. Patricia Fahey, state senator from Albany, has called for the passage of what she calls the Fair News Act. I don't know what the acronym stands for, which would require disclaimers when AI is used in any published news content. Let's listen to what Senator Fahey had to say about this.
We need newsrooms. We know they are very much under pressure, but the last thing we need is that their work is being scrapped or repackaged or replaced without standards or accountability. The legislation doesn't stop innovation. It's just asking that we be straight forward with our readers, respect original reporting.
So here's Senator Fahey saying, let everybody know if journalism uses artificial intelligence. You think that's a good idea?
I think it's a good idea. I question whether it should come from the state.
Interesting.
Right. The last thing we need is the politicians telling us how to run our newsrooms. It's a blatant violation of the First Amendment, prior restraint. I agree. I think that AI can be a terrible thing for local original reporting, but I think it will have its use in newsrooms going forward. I agree. I think if you use AI, it's got to be labeled, but I do not want a law requiring newsrooms to do this or to do that. It's just, as we say, the proverbial slippery slope.
It's an interesting point. I wonder where this legislation came from. I wonder what prompted. I'd be very eager to talk to Senator Pat Fahey about this because it sounds like an interesting, well-intentioned piece of legislation that probably isn't a good idea.
Don't you worry, Rex. I'll be having her on the Capitol asking her that very question. But I think you're right, Judy. I kind of joked before the program that I like the idea, but when you really think about it, that slippery slope is dangerous. You could see, well, now we're going to prosecute. We're going to start prosecuting news organizations when they haven't labeled. Yeah. And then that becomes a question of veracity there, especially if it's politicized and a politician wants to use it. You could see where that could become a nightmare.
And I think that realistically, everybody uses AI already because anytime you do a Google search, you're basically getting AI results. So you could say that every piece of journalism practically these days has AI effect in it. And I think everything we're doing increasingly is going to be touched by AI.
Does that mean more mistakes?
Oh, I don't know. Probably.
You know, but it does mean that we as an industry probably do need to work on some guidelines. You know, the Society of Professional Journalists should probably do more along this line just to get the word out that, you know, we need, this is the industry, the technology is moving so quickly that maybe we're not keeping up with it from an ethical perspective.
I believe that's exactly right. It is moving so quickly right now that we're in for a lot of trouble in the beginnings of this before we iron out what should have been ironed out before.
Now, do we use AI? Is Rex AI generated or anything?
Do we in this show? Program? At WAMC, are we? Okay.
We do not use AI.
All right, David AI Gustina. It's a great thing. Thank you. By the way, folks, if you
stands for something different.
If you are interested in joining us, the media project from WAMC, we are media@wamc.org. If you'd like to send us your thoughts, we'd always love to hear from you.
I want to say, Rex, that because we had that University at Albany live event, we had a couple weeks in between, and we've gotten some letters. I apologize to some listeners because we passed a lot of those subjects. That's the problem with this program. It moves so quickly.
Yeah.
We have to move quickly with the letters.
So on we go. One more thing that we really need to talk about. We have mentioned, of course, the president's lawsuits against news organizations and now the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, an arm of the Trump administration, is suing the New York Times. It was brought on behalf of a white male employee who claims that he was denied promotion because his race and gender. He's a white male. And he wanted to become a deputy editor. There are about 100 people in the New York Times newsroom with the title deputy editor. And he did not get the job. And I'm curious about two things here. First is the government stepping in on behalf of this. And second, the notion of advancement where gender or race or any other issues beyond your capacity to edit are playing into that. As a newsroom manager for many years, Judy, what do you think?
Oh, I think when it comes to a promotion, there's never only one person ideally suited for a promotion. I think there usually are many people, much like Supreme Court justices, there are usually many people who are qualified to be in this position. So you have to, you make a decision based on what you want that person to bring to the role. So there's a lot at play here. You know, whenever I go to newspaper conferences, it's a sea of old white guys. I mean, to this day, it's a sea of old white guys.
And not that there's anything wrong with old white guys.
No.
But
it's an issue the industry is still struggling with. And in this case, the employee didn't even file the complaint. The EEOC filed it on its own, in part, I think, because the New York Times was writing stories about DEI, or diversity, equity, and inclusion.
So there's your context there.
Yeah, it's like diversity has become a bad word in some, but diversity, especially from a journalism perspective, brings new voices, new perspectives to what you produce for a diverse audience.
Absolutely. We've had this conversation in this studio for so many years about the value of diversity in journalism, because you need to have those voices if you're covering those communities. And besides the guy, the young man in question, the old man in question, whoever the white guy is, maybe he's just a grouch. I mean, I don't know. As you say, there are many reasons why you don't promote someone.
Well, but on this show, we can use it as an example. We are always looking for new, young, diverse people to be on this program. We've got one right now, Raga Justin, who we love. There are three other white men I could be bringing in here right now who could speak on that. But we would like to hear what a person like Raga has to say. And I think that adds to our understanding of the world around us. If we're supposed to be presenting things that are not necessarily in our experience, our wheelhouse, then we're going to need a diverse group of people to tell the stories.
Well put. The goal of journalism being to tell the truth, to give people a true picture of the world beyond their own experience. And that is a very diverse world. That's where we have to leave the show today. We are out of time for the Media
Thank
Project.
God, this isn't an hour.
David Gustina, our producer, has been in front of the microphone here. Judy Patrick, always wonderful to be here with you, former editor of the Daily Gazette. And I'm Rex Smith, formerly editor of the Times Union, now the Upstate American is what I produce. We are grateful to you for joining us and hope that you'll come back again next week for the Media Project.
Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage, ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild, got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill, all together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people.
The Media Project is a national production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio. This week's projectors include former Times Union editor and current Upstate American Substack columnist Rex Smith, Judy Patrick, former vice president for editorial development for the New York Press Association and former editor of the Daily Gazette. You can listen to The Media Project anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm your producer, David Gustina. Thanks for listening.
Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.